Hey, Prime members, did you know that you could be listening to this show ad-free on Amazon Music? With Amazon Music, you get access to the most ad-free top podcasts. Avoid the ads and start listening today.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, July 25th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Artificial intelligence and the growing number of generative AI tools seem poised to one day replace humans in many professions. For now, though, these AI programs rely on human workers to train them to filter out harmful content, including violent and sexual material. And the toll that can take on the people who do it can be significant.
I'm very proud that I participated in that project. Now ChatGPT is safe. But now, the question I always ask myself, was my input worth what I received in return?
Reporter Karen Howe traveled to Kenya and spoke with some of the quality analysts. She'll join us later in the show to explain the work they did and how it impacts programs like ChatGPT. First, though, over the weekend, Elon Musk announced he was rebranding Twitter, ditching its famous jovial blue bird and replacing it with an X. The company already officially changed its name to X, according to a legal filing. It's all part of Musk's plan to use Twitter as the foundation of a new everything app called X.com. Aaron Back is the deputy editor for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street columns and is with me now to discuss Musk's ambition. Lay the groundwork for us, Aaron. What is an everything app?
So an everything app is an idea that is really inspired by the success of certain internet companies in China, most notably Tencent, but also Alibaba. And these companies really succeeded in building out a whole bunch of different offerings all in one app. The classic example is Tencent's WeChat, which is originally just sort of a chat app, but then expanded into payments, entertainment, and all other different things. So it's an app that can do everything. It can message, you can shop on it, you can do payments on it. It's all these different things.
So Elon Musk has expressed this desire to make Twitter the foundation of an everything app. How could that work?
So he has said publicly previously that he's interested in copying the WeChat model. So basically, you take people who are on Twitter all day and you start offering them other stuff. They say, would you like to be able to pay your Twitter contacts through a payment service? Notably, Elon was also at PayPal years ago, so he knows a thing or two about payments. And then you could say, I see you're tweeting about movies. Do you want to be able to buy movie tickets through Twitter? Do you want to be able to subscribe to this news service that you're tweeting through Twitter? That's the idea.
Okay, so how realistic would it be for Musk to replicate that Chinese model with Twitter?
When this happened in China, there was a very unique set of circumstances that allowed it. First of all, you had a financial system in China that was very underdeveloped. Most people were using cash, actually, to pay for things. Credit card penetration was extremely low. And so when the internet came along, people leapfrogged straight into digital payments. And there wasn't an established player in digital payments. So the internet companies were able to leapfrog over all of this infrastructure to sort of break through. They were the first people to offer digital payments in China. And, you know, the situation in the United States today is entirely different. You have very well-established financial payments companies. You have very well-established financial payments networks. And the same is true across other categories. So, like, there wasn't a very well-developed online travel booking ecosystem in China. And so the early movers were able to move into that space quickly. And you also didn't really have very active domestic antitrust enforcement in China. So one or two, or maybe about three internet companies in China ended up literally buying up stakes in everyone else. And so they were able to build their own dominant ecosystems because they were early movers. And this is, again, just a very unique set of circumstances present in China that you don't find in developed markets today.
Is it possible to have an everything app that is everything except finance? Is it possible to remove that part of it and still be broader than what Twitter is?
Again, you know, if you think about the areas that they would want to move into, you know, the everything apps in China were very dominant in things like food delivery, okay? There's already a ton of competition in food delivery with some very, very big companies duking it out with each other. I don't really see Twitter moving into that and making a big splash. Same thing with travel booking. Like, it's just, It's theoretically possible, but the reality is that the competitive landscape in the U.S. is not really going to allow Twitter to move into all these new areas and dominate them.
All right, that was Aaron Back, the deputy editor for the WSJ's Heard on the Street columns. Coming up, low-paid workers in East Africa helped prevent AI chatbots from spitting out offensive or grotesque content. We'll tell you about this often traumatizing job after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by the Kellogg School of Management. Getting to the next level of your career requires a next-level education. At Kellogg, you'll choose from full-time, part-time, or executive MBA programs, where you'll gain the Wall Street edge you need to compete for the most coveted jobs. For more details, visit kell.gg/leader. That's kell.gg/leader.
Generative artificial intelligence programs like ChatGPT are capable of coming up with creative and natural-sounding responses due to the huge swaths of text they're trained on. But to prevent these systems from saying harmful, violent, or sexual things, low-paid workers in East Africa were hired to do the often traumatizing work needed to filter this material. Karen Howe went to Kenya to speak with some of these quality analysts, and she joins me now. Karen, the workers that you met, what were they hired to do?
The workers were hired to build a safety filter that is an AI system purely meant to detect harmful, violent, sexual content. So they were given tens of thousands of text passages in batches, and they had to read through them one by one to label, is this violent piece of content extreme graphic violence? Is this sexual content rape, or is it bestiality? And they did that day in and day out as their full-time job for 5 months in order to build an automated safety filter that would be able to screen all of this stuff out of an AI model.
Who were they working for?
They were working for OpenAI via this outsourcing company called Sama. And Sama is a company that does sort of behind-the-scenes data work for a lot of different U.S. tech giants, including Meta as well.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the work? I mean, specifically, what kinds of passages were they looking at, and how do we know that?
The kinds of text that they were reviewing, it was coming from multiple different sources. And this is according to a research paper that OpenAI wrote, where it says that it pooled together text from open source data sets that are released by academia or scraped from the internet, like Reddit forums, like the deepest and darkest corners that you can imagine on the internet. And there were also texts that was generated by AI itself. The workers described to me that they were originally a few sentences in the beginning, but they started getting longer and longer to 5 or 6 paragraphs. So these were really detailed, very graphic descriptions of things, including child sexual abuse, where workers were describing really grotesque beat by beat things that they had to read and that they would visualize in their minds because it was so detailed.
How did the workers say that impacted them?
We spoke with 2 workers that directly labeled this stuff day in and day out. One was on the violence content team, and the other one was on the sexual content team. Alex on the violent content team, he started feeling incredibly socially withdrawn and socially anxious after reading this stuff.
Oh, my mental state was very bad. I had nightmares. I feared people. Maybe I see too many people coming. I see violence. If I see someone holding a fork or a razor blade, I see people cutting themselves or something like that. At night, I will dream. I will have nightmares. Even I'll tell my brother, okay, just come here, sit with me like for 5 hours before I go to sleep, because I need someone to talk to before I go to sleep, because if I go to sleep, I'll start screaming or something like that. So many things are going a lot in my mind, yeah. Yeah.
You also spoke with Mofat Okini on the sexual content team. I want to play a clip from your conversation with him.
I'm very proud that I participated in that project, now ChatGPT is safe. But now, the question I always ask myself, was my input worth what I received in return?
Karen, can you tell us a little bit more about his experience?
Moffat, he very similarly started feeling high levels of anxiety and depression and started suffering from insomnia. And unfortunately, because he changed so drastically, his wife ended up leaving. Moffat has tried to receive psychological counseling, but the estimated cost of psychological counseling is equivalent to his monthly salary.
Have Sama or OpenAI commented on this at all, either on these individual cases or the general impact of this kind of work?
Sama said that they provided a lot of different mechanisms of support to workers that were going through these types of projects. They had counseling, both group sessions and individual. They had prayer and meditation rooms. They had free lunches, other types of things to try and make sure that the workers were comfortable. And they also did what they call resiliency screenings to make sure that the workers knew beforehand what was the kind of work that they were doing and that they could volunteer with consent. The challenge is these workers live in Nairobi, in Kenya, where it is an extremely low-income country and there's really high levels of unemployment. And the workers explained to me that this project arrived during the peak pandemic and there was just no work to be found. They didn't have any other option but to take it because they needed to pay for their bills. And OpenAI said that they had spent 6 months vetting an appropriate vendor for this kind of work because they understood that it was going to be sensitive in nature and that it was going to be challenging. And they selected Sama in part because of Sama's track record as a good employer that is able to do this kind of work well. And OpenAI also said that this kind of work ultimately, the purpose was not to have these workers doing this really damaging work for no reason. It's for a means to an end. The end being that these systems that OpenAI builds, like ChatGPT, cannot exist and cannot safely exist in the world without the contribution that these workers made.
Is there a way to clean up the data without using humans?
There is currently no good way to do it without humans. There have been attempts within the research community to try and minimize the exposure to humans by designing better tools that automate some of it away or designing a better interface that exposes the workers to the content in shorter periods of time. But right now, automating the stuff away is just not as good as human judgment.
All right, that was our reporter, Karen Howe. And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.